We begin today in James chapter 5, verse 7, and we're going to read and study through verse 11. That is James 5, verses 7 through 11. And the first thing that we want to do is to read this passage, and then we're going to talk about the topic in this section, and that is patience in tribulation. Let's read, beginning in James 5, verse 7. Be patient, therefore, brethren, unto the coming of the Lord. Behold, the husbandman waiteth for the precious fruit of the earth, and hath long patience for it, until he receive the early and latter rain. Be ye also patient, establish your hearts, for the coming of the Lord draweth nigh. Grudge not one against another, brethren, lest ye be condemned. Behold, the judge standeth before the door. Take, my brethren, the prophets, who have spoken in the name of the Lord, for an example of suffering affliction and of patience. Behold, we count them happy which endure. You have heard of the patience of Job, and have seen the end of the Lord, that the Lord is very pitiful and of tender mercy. Now, as we talk about this subject of patience in tribulation, it's good for us to remember that this was a trying time for Christians, and the worst was yet to come. You see, this book of James was evidently written a few years before 70 AD, and that was the time when the Romans destroyed Jerusalem in what Jesus had described as the worst tribulation that the world had ever known or would ever know. Matthew 24, verse 21. The Jews and the Romans were about to collide in a horrific war. And before that, the Christians were being persecuted by both Jews and Romans, and especially the Jews. And so what we find is that the book of James is much like the book of 1 Peter in that James is warning these people about the hardships involved prior to that war. And what we find in 1 Peter is that the theme of suffering is one of the main topics of that book. And so when you read the book of 1 Peter, you read a lot about suffering and about persecution. And in 1 Peter chapter 4, you find somewhat of a parallel passage to James chapter 5 in this section that we're looking at, because in 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 7, Peter said, "But the end of all things is at hand." Now, the end of all things does not refer in this passage to the end of time. He's not talking about the end of the world. He's not talking about the day of judgment. He's talking in this passage about the end of the Jewish economy, the end of that dispensation, the end of the Jewish state as they knew it. He says it was at hand, that was nearby. And as he continues through this section, he says things that are very similar to what we just read in James chapter 5. He said, because the end of all these things is at hand or nearby, you need to therefore be sober and watch unto prayer. And down in verse 12 of 1 Peter chapter 4, he said, "Beloved, think it not strange concerning the fiery trial which is to try you, as though some strange thing happened unto you. But rejoice, inasmuch as ye are partakers of Christ's suffering." Now, there's a lot more to say about suffering in the book of 1 Peter, and as you read through the book of 1 Peter, you'll just notice many times that he talks a great deal about suffering. But as we look at James chapter 5, we see the same setting. We see that this is the very situation that James describes in James 5, verses 7 through 11. So let's look at those verses. Beginning in James chapter 5, verse 7, he says, "Be patient." And as we're going to see even more in this section, the word patience means to endure. He said, "Be patient, therefore, brethren, unto the coming of the Lord." And the coming of the Lord here refers to Jesus coming in judgment on the Jewish nation in AD 70, and we're about to see why that's so in just a few minutes. But notice now in verse 7 how that all of this that he says fits into this situation and the time frame that we're talking about. He says in verse 7 that the husbandman waits for the precious fruit of the earth. The husbandman here is a farmer, and the farmer here represents God. What is God doing? Well, God is waiting. God is having long patience. What is he waiting for? What is he having long patience about? You see, the first example of patience in this passage that we're looking at is God himself. God is a patient God. God is a long-suffering God. This is exactly what God had done with the Jewish nation for hundreds of years. God was patient with the Jewish people for over 1,500 years. He had endured their murmurings and their disobedience and their rebellion. He had even endured them rejecting Jesus as the Son of God. And after that, he gave them an opportunity to be forgiven. And he is just about, at this time, to put an end to the whole Jewish system. He's giving them every chance. He's giving them plenty of time to obey him. But then, he's going to put an end to that dispensation. So, the destruction of Jerusalem, that is the coming of the Lord that he refers to here, happened in AD 70. So, the book of James was written prior to that great catastrophe. And James is warning these Christians about the fiery trial, as Peter calls it, that is going to escalate just prior to the destruction of Jerusalem. So he says that God is patient with these Jewish people. In other words, he's saying that God did not immediately put an end to the Jewish system and destroy the city of Jerusalem immediately after the Jews rejected Jesus as the Messiah. As a matter of fact, they rejected the Messiah and had him executed in AD 33. So it was almost 40 years or an entire generation that had the opportunity to repent of what they had done in rejecting the Son of God himself. But then, in AD 70, God required that justice be served, and the Jewish nation was brought to its knees in the destruction of Jerusalem. And the Bible tells us in verse 8, "Be ye also patient." Just as God is patient with man, he said, you need to be patient. Establish your hearts. Be grounded and be settled, because, he says, for the coming of the Lord draws nigh. That is, the coming of the Lord is near. The coming of the Lord is at hand. Now, that couldn't be the second coming, because it has been almost 2,000 years since James wrote those words. He wouldn't be saying that the Lord's second coming would be near or at hand if it were at least 2,000 years in the future. He's writing to these people, and he's saying to these readers in the first century that something was near to them, that this event was near, it was at the door in their time. And that must be his coming in judgment upon the Jewish people in 70 AD. And we find that explained in Matthew 24, verses 1 through 35. Now, in verse 9, he tells these people, while you're being persecuted and while you're enduring so much affliction, be careful that you don't turn against each other. Notice that he says, grudge not against one another, brethren. Why would he say that in the midst of a section where he's talking about affliction, persecution, and enduring all these hardships? Well, it's because people can have the tendency to turn on one another when they have to pull away from the world, because the world is so evil, so cold, and in such opposition to Christians. Do not grudge against one another. The American Standard Version translates that, murmur not. The New King James says, do not grumble against one another. This is a word that is sometimes translated in the New Testament to groan or to sigh or to have grief. So he's saying here, among other things, don't complain and don't gripe about each other. Don't resent having to put up with each other. And don't have ill will. Don't harbor grudges. Don't let anger and personal dislikes cause you to feel bad toward a brother and treat him unjustly. And he reminds us, "Behold, the judge standeth before the door," or the judge, who is God, is standing at the door. Now remember the context. Remember the setting about the destruction of Jerusalem. God's judgment is about to be poured out on Jerusalem. And if any of these Christians leave the faith over personal animosity and they go back to that old Jewish religion and the old Jewish culture, then they're going to face a horrible death if they are in Jerusalem, and they will face eternal damnation when they die. And there's a practical lesson for us here as well, and it's this. Our personal differences with each other seem much smaller when we consider great calamities of life. James is saying to these Christians, your personal gripes and dislikes with each other are very unimportant, and they are very small compared to this great calamity that is looming in the future. And in our time, we ought to look at personal gripes and personal disagreements in the same way and keep them in perspective. And these larger, more serious issues of life ought to help us to put things in proportion. In verse 10, he gives a second example of patience. In verse 10, he talks about the prophets. These prophets, he said, spoke in the name of the Lord, and that was their job, and they suffered because of it. Take them, he says, as an example of suffering, affliction, and of patience. Elijah the prophet suffered. Jeremiah suffered. He shed many tears and was thrown into prison, once with a mud floor. Micaiah and Ezekiel and Amos and the prophets killed during the reign of Ahab and Jezebel all suffered great affliction. They preached, they suffered, but they endured. And James is saying that is patience. Now we come to example number 3. And that example is the case of Job. He says in verse 11, you have heard of the patience of Job. And by saying you have heard of the patience of Job, this would fit well with these people having a strong Jewish background, because they would more than likely have read the account of the book of James. People with a strong Gentile background may not have had that kind of experience. He talks about the patience of Job. And the word patience means endurance. And this example of Job shows us what patience is at its core. Sometimes people think that patience means that you're never rattled, that nothing ever bothers you, that you never become anxious, that you're always calm, cool, and collected. But this does not mean being calm and cool and so collected that Job never spoke out of turn or got agitated or frustrated, because he did. Job complained. Job got sarcastic with his friends, and Job even criticized God. And of course, he later repented of that, but he said some things that were out of turn. When the Bible talks about the patience of Job, it means that he endured. It means that he never gave up. And James reminds us of the end of the Lord, that is, the end result or the end benefit of God, that he is very pitiful and of tender mercy. Job thought that God was being cruel to him, but in the end, he saw that God was just and, in fact, very merciful. So if the prophets could endure what they suffered, if Job could endure what he went through, and if these early Christians could endure their sufferings, there should be no reason why we as Christians today cannot.